Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Lucas Audio production, where entertainment is always free.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Bill Holwick, and tonight
we have a show from Theater 5. Theater 5 was APC's attempt to revive radio drama during the early 1960s. The series name was derived from its time slot, 5 o'clock p.m. Running Monday through Friday, it was an anthology of short stories, each about 20 minutes long. News programs and commercials filled out the full 30 minutes. There was a good bit of science fiction, and some of the plots seemed to have been taken from the daily newspaper. Fred Foy of Lone Ranger fame was an ABC staff announcer of the early 60s who, among other duties, did Theater 5. And now, enjoy the show.
Just one more kiss, Gloria.
Masterful.
Talented, too. Want to see me tap dance?
Oh, I'd love to. Golly gee, Oscar. That's wonderful.
Oh, nothing, really. I hope she doesn't find out I'm 105 years old.
The old goat. And just imagine, they wrote a story about him that you're going to hear on Theater 5.
I guess perhaps I am the most procrastinating man you ever met. I didn't kill my wife until my 65th birthday. I might never have killed her at all if it hadn't been for the fact that one day I cleaned out the attic. And the reason I cleaned out the attic was that Nadine was my wife, insisted on it.
Well now, Oscar, what do you think you're doing here?
Well, I was just sitting down for a minute, Nadine. I was kind of relaxing.
Relaxing? Relaxing at 11 o'clock in the morning?
Well, it is my day off.
A day off should be used for work. You know that, Oscar.
Well, I did the dishes. I made the bed.
Why don't you clean out the attic?
Oh, now, Nadine.
Clean out the attic.
So I cleaned out the attic. The attic was clean anyway. Nadine used to make me clean it out once every couple of weeks. But I went up there and moved things from here to there and back again and made sweeping sounds with the broom. And then, I don't know why I did it, but I poked into the eaves. It was an old house we lived in, and by George, I found an old book that I'd never seen there before. The title of the book was Magic Potions and Spells for Ye Complete Sorcerer. I sat down on the floor and started to read it. It was full of recipes. There was one recipe that interested me greatly, principally because of the directions that went with it. I read it over and over again.
Well, reading.
Sorry, Nadine, I haven't read more than a page or so.
Well, stop reading this minute and get busy. And remember, I can hear downstairs whether you're working or not.
So I held the broom in one hand and the book in the other, and I swept the broom back and forth on the same place on the floor, and I read the directions that went with that recipe again and again.
Oh, until thou hast firstly rid thyself of whosoever has caused thee discomfort. Only then shouldst thou mix and drink. Great wonders will follow, and thou shalt have what thou deservest from life.
Well, aren't you finished yet? The rugs must be beaten.
Nadine, you're causing me a great deal of discomfort.
Well, I never.
Jill, I might have put the matter from my mind, except that on my 65th birthday, when I was nearly old enough to die, I wandered into the park and watched the lovers strolling in the sunlight, the young men's arms around the young girl's waist. The contrast between my wife and these young girls was almost too much for me to bear. So I went home to be greeted by Nadine.
Oscar, clean out the cellar.
And I went and stood at the top of the cellar stairs and hesitated.
Well, Oscar, go down the stairs and get to it.
Nadine, come here.
What do you want?
Nadine, there are never any passages of tenderness between you and me.
What kind of foolishness is this?
I never tell you how much I appreciate you, Nadine.
Well, you certainly ought to.
I know. You may feel, and I wouldn't blame you, I never think about you very much, but I do. Shall I tell you what I think about, Nadine?
Why, yes, Oscar.
I think about your clothes. Those worn bombazine dresses with high choker collars.
Well, I try to dress like a respectable woman.
And I think about those long, shapeless flannel nightgowns you wear. And I don't know of another wife who bounds from her bed to greet each sunrise half an hour before it arrives. And then begins a filibuster against sin, which lasts until the hour you have appointed as a respectable bedtime, 9 p.m.
Oh, you do remember that our bedtime is 9 p.m.
The sound of your voice never leaves my ears.
Oh, you're such a fine, sensible husband.
You really think I'm sensible?
Of course. You were sensible enough to marry me for my money, weren't you?
Ah, and how wisely you've guarded that money for me.
That's because I know how highly you prize that money.
While we're speaking of it, I should add that I am so grateful that to your fortune, you have added 75% of what I have earned in 40 years of toil.
Oh, don't speak of such a little thing.
Oh, but I insist on speaking of it. And I'll speak of how there's another side to you, too. For you have known how to spend on great pleasures the other 25% of my earnings. You have not hesitated to plunge recklessly into the delights of stew meat, dark green shapeless dresses, and contributions to missionaries engaged in clothing heathens.
Ah.
No price has been too high for you when it was a question of your favorite vegetable, turnips, or your favorite sweet, rice pudding. You have reveled in the extravagance of temperance club dues. Nor have you forgotten my pleasures, for you bought me a bicycle to pedal to work.
Oh, why shouldn't I have done all this for my husband?
It adds up to this, Nadine. You have been an indefatigably good wife.
And you have been a husband.
I have only one small complaint.
What is that?
You dust the keyholes.
What is wrong with that, Oscar?
I find the symbolism of it depressing.
I don't see why.
Well, you can think it over on the trip you're going to take.
What trip?
Here, let me put my hand on your back and I'll tell you what trip.
I don't understand.
You will in the next couple of seconds. The trip you're going to take is a trip down these cellar stairs. After I had reported my unfortunate wife's unfortunate fatal accident to the police, I mixed the potion according to the recipe in the book I had found in the attic, and then I drank it. I was now a millionaire. And I suppose that was a great wonder, but I had expected other great wonders, less predictable. For a month or two, nothing seemed to happen. And when something did happen, I did not at first appreciate it.
Well, what seems to be the trouble, Mr. Brown?
Doctor, it's my hair.
Your hair?
Or maybe my digestion.
Your digestion? Well, now, you are 65 years old.
I know. That's just it.
Well, at 65, a man can't expect to feel like a young man of 30.
I guess in a way, it's my eyes, mostly.
Well, come now, Mr. Brown. First it's your hair, then it's your digestion, then it's your eyes. Now, which is it?
Well, it's all of them, really. Doctor, what color would you say my hair is?
Well, it's brown with gray in it.
Not gray with brown in it?
No.
Well, it used to be gray with brown in it, and then it was gray without brown, but now it's brown with gray in it.
What are you getting at?
And then there's my digestion.
Well, a little bicarb of soda.
No, I don't need bicarb of soda anymore. That's just the point. My digestion is very good. It's most unsettling.
What are you complaining about?
My eyes.
Well, what about them?
Things blur in front of me.
Well, we've already established that you're 65 years old.
I can't see anything at all clearly unless I take off my glasses.
Mr. Brown, you've had a tragic loss recently, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, I think you should try to put these things out of your mind. Brooding about your wife won't bring her back. Trying to pretend to yourself that you're younger than you are can only lead to overexertion and a possible heart attack. I'd suggest plenty of rest.
Thank you, Doctor.
That'll be $10, please.
I left the doctor's office, and inside me there was a wild stallion of hope beating its hooves against my rib cage. I don't know why I hadn't realized before what was happening. My hair was turning brown again. Once again, I could eat fried foods at midnight without consequence. I had regained the good vision of my younger days. And even as I walked toward home, I began to feel my third teeth pushing my upper plate right out of my mouth. Great wonders indeed. I was growing backwards. I was growing younger. When a man finds that he's growing younger, it poses a problem for him. But I have heard of more unpleasant problems. In the years that followed after my visit to the doctor, I moved from town to town, never staying anywhere long enough to enable neighbors to notice that I was getting 1 year younger every 12 months. I couldn't talk to anybody about my problem or about my hopes and plans, but I was sustained by a lively, wild music that played constantly in my mind's ear. I had had 40 years of Nadine's strident respectability. But that was all over now. I was going to wipe those 40 years out. I proposed to grow backwards until I reached the age of 25 again, and then to find a new wife. But my new wife would be nothing like Nadine. She would be empty-headed. She would be rattle-brained. She would be a peroxide blonde. And above all, she would be fun-loving. But it wouldn't do for her or anyone else to know that I was getting younger, because no blonde in all the land would be empty-headed or rattle-brained enough to open her arms to me if she realized that in a short time, he would have to feed me my formula from a baby bottle. So I moved every 6 months, and I was lonely. But what lay ahead of me was worth it. As I approached 30, I found it quite difficult to keep from winking at girls. And when I passed 30 and entered my 20s, the devil kept whispering that starting a few years earlier would really make little difference. My mind was set on 25 as the perfect age for what I had in mind, and so, as austerely as any monk, I saved myself for heaven. When I was 26 minus one half, I hastened to Manhattan, took an apartment on Park Avenue, and for 6 months, I spent money. I spent it in nightclubs and in certain exclusive dress shops. I spent it on exotic food and bubbly drink and costly raiment for costly brunettes. The brunettes, of course, were to rehearse with, for my 25th birthday was fast approaching now. And when finally I went searching for my empty-headed, rattle-brained, fun-loving peroxide blonde, I found her in the chorus line of the Wayfarers Club. Her name was Gloria, and I do believe she fell in love with me at first sight of my wallet. At any rate, she sat with me at my table between portions.
Golly, Mr. Brown. It's awfully nice of you to take interest in little me.
Not at all. You're very beautiful, you know.
You're just saying that.
Because it's true.
Oh, you.
I like the way you talk. Such refreshing unoriginality.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Brown. You sure are some flatterer.
You don't know what your IQ is by any chance, do you?
What's that?
Never mind. I guess you've told me. Now, tell me some other things about yourself.
Well, you wouldn't think it to look at me, Mr. Brown, but I've had a very hard life.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Daddy was a drunk. Mummy took in washing.
Dear me.
Well, she took in boarders, too, Mr. Brown. So, I ran away as soon as I could.
I don't blame you.
Oh, I guess I was always a dreamer. I wanted to improve myself. I wanted to find something better than I'd been used to.
Of course you did.
I guess I've done pretty fine so far.
It would certainly seem so. You're the prettiest girl in the whole chorus line.
Oh, you.
You have more fun here in New York, don't you?
Oh, gosh, yes, Mr. Brown. Fun is what I have the most of. You know, it's a funny thing about being in a chorus line. You meet a lot of men, go to a lot of parties.
You like parties, don't you?
Oh, gosh, sure. There's always men at parties.
You like men, too?
Name me one thing that's kinder and nicer to a girl and gives her more presents than men.
Well, only if you please them.
Well, I just love to please men.
Gloria, mm-hmm. Did you ever think of just pleasing one man for the rest of your life?
Well, it'd have to be the right kind of man.
I live on Park Avenue.
Do you? Now?
Well, I happen to have here in my pocket a list of the stocks that I own.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Brown. How would you expect little me to understand stocks? Let's see it.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, goodness gracious. American Tell and Tell.
Gloria.
Yes, Mr. Brown?
Will you marry me?
Oh, gee whiz. Of course, Mr. Brown.
On my 25th birthday, Gloria and I were married. Our wedding night was quite different from the wedding night I'd spent so many years before with Nadine. The following day, I missed Gloria after lunch, and I went looking for her. I found her in the master bedroom, and I must say, the minute I opened the door, I got the shock of my 105 years. What have you done to your hair? Mouse brown now.
And that's what it will remain. I'm married now so I can be respectable.
Where did you get that dress you're wearing?
Why, don't you like it?
It's
shapeless, and it's dark green. Where'd you get it?
From my hope chest.
Well, maybe we can get away with the kind of hair you've got, but those clothes will never do at the Wayfarers Club.
No, we won't go to the Wayfarers Club any longer. From now on, we go to bed at 9 o'clock.
Oh, I need a drink.
Oh, I've thrown all the liquor out. There will be no strong drink in this house.
Gloria, I
don't
understand.
And incidentally, my IQ, it's 135.
Oh, no.
I've made an appointment for you tomorrow with Perkins and Daniels, a very conservative insurance company. They're going to give you a job. And you are going to work hard at it. You don't want to waste your life.
I want a divorce.
Oh, divorce is not respectable. And besides, you'll never have cause for divorce. I'm not that kind of girl any longer. And as for you, Oscar Brown, it's time you stop behaving like a schoolboy. In case you haven't noticed, your hair is getting gray.
I looked in the mirror. She was right. I was getting gray again. I was growing older again like everyone else. The formula, as promised, had given me what I deserved for killing Nadine. Just exactly what I deserved. I was in for another 40 years with Gloria.
Theater 5 has presented The Second Chance, written by Robert Sanadella and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, George Petrie, Ethel Everett, Evelyn Juster, and William Griffiths. Audio engineer Marty Folia.
Adventures Club meets again. Its members, men from every walk of life, adventurers all, have one thing in common, courage. At each meeting, one of their number tells of his strangest adventure. They all seem in good humor. That is, all but one. A dark, moody man whose face is new to the club. Let us hear where the trail of adventure has led this newest member of the World's Adventures Club.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, quiet, please. Thank you. I am pleased to see you in good spirits tonight, my friends. We must make a good impression on our new member.
A newcomer, eh? Fine. That means a new adventure tale, a new thrill.
Yeah. Interesting looking chap. Gloomy, though.
Where's he from? That he's been through plenty.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, don't let your imaginations run away with you. Suppose we extend the hand of fellowship to Mr. Harvey Clark. And allow him to tell his own story.
Fine. Let's hear it, Mr. Clark. Glad to have you here.
I wonder, gentlemen, I wonder if you'll be glad to extend the hand of fellowship to a murderer.
What?
I'm joking, of course.
No, I'm not joking, gentlemen. I have come here as a criminal. You are my jury. I came because you are men who have learned to think quick and straight. You will not temper justice with court law or legal red tape. You have all stared death in the face at some time or other, or worse than death.
Right.
Listen, and then judge me. Judge me as fairly as if we were in the midst of a Central American jungle, as Jackson and I were 2 years ago. We had been engineering in the interior. Jackson had a bad attack of fever, and as soon as he was able to travel, we started for the coast and a furlough home. It was new country to us. Necessity for speed forced us to travel light. Our only trail was a gloomy jungle stream, which our camp boys told us led to the coast. It had been terrific work breaking through the brush, but suddenly we came to a clearing. Dark and foreboding, a jungle vacuum, yet alive with jungle mystery.
Pleasant little spot. Reminds me of the morgue at home. Without the bodies, of course.
The fever hasn't drained your irony, Jackson. Sit down and rest a bit while I take a look around.
No, don't go out of sight, Harvey. This place gives me the creeps. I feel like we're being watched. Even the trees seem alive. What's that?
Where? Oh, those big monkeys. Good Lord, man, the fever has made you jumpy. Now take it easy. We'll soon reach the coast, and then the first steamer home.
Boy, will I be glad to get there.
What are you looking at, Harvey?
I thought this coast was a tree stump at first. The pines fooled me. See? It's been made by human hands.
And what's this carving on it?
Why, man, it's an altar.
Altar, eh? Probably belongs to the Indians who worship the crocodiles.
It's used by savages, all right, but they don't worship crocodiles.
Well, there's a wide variety of wildlife to choose from down here. What do they worship, Professor Jackson?
Cannibal ants.
Oh, come now. You're joking.
I was never more serious in my life. Remember that book about native tribes that I was reading in camp before I had the fever?
Do I? I think that's what gave you the fever.
That book hinted of a tribe of unknown savages. They had only been glimpsed by white men, but their sacrificial altars had been found in the trail of the cannibal ants. Monstrous insects. Vast armies of them. Well, these ants had been purposely drawn to the altars, and there they attacked the victims, bound to these altars, and picked their bones clean.
Yes, yes, omit the gory details. I know all about those murderous things, and I've seen what happens to any living creature that gets in their path. A man can't even walk across their line of march and survive. But as far as imagining this...
It isn't imagination, Harvey. This altar resembles those described in the book. The carvings identify it.
Now, see here, Jackson. This place is getting on your nerves. Let's be moving.
Listen. Tom-toms.
Strange. We must be near a native village.
The drums are growing louder. They're all around us.
Oh, come now. You'll have me believing your crazy tale.
The monkeys. Up in the trees. What are they looking at?
Now, pull yourself together, man. Some tribe is probably trying to drive the devils out of the bush.
You know the language of the tom-toms, Harvey. Does that sound like the devil drums?
Well, no. But hang it all, man. You mustn't let this thing...
It's the cannibal worshippers. It's too late to escape now, Harvey. I warned you.
Ugly-looking devils, whoever they are. I don't recognize the tribe, either.
Good God. What can we do?
Now, don't show any fear. Perhaps they are merely curious. At least they haven't made an unfriendly move as yet. I'll raise the hand of friendship and see if they understand.
Don't move, Harvey. A blowpipe dart in the trees behind you.
Phew. Well, thanks, old man. Funny they'd try a thing like that since we're armed. Evidently, they've never seen a gun.
Don't you know what that proves, Harvey?
Well, we know that they're not friendly at any rate.
They're the cannibal ant worshippers, man. Those pieces of raw meat they're carrying, they'll use them to attract the ants here.
Then go for your gun, Jackson. We'll shoot our way out.
No! No, you devils, no! It's too late to use my gun, Harvey. They've got me.
Keep your nerve up, Jackson. I'll start shooting if I can shake these black rats off for a second. Come on, stop it. Where are you taking me, you fiends? Let me go. Let me go.
They're saving you, Harvey. They'd lose too much pleasure killing us both at once. Oh, Harvey, don't let them. Tie me here. Don't leave me here alone.
Don't give up, old man. If I can only reach my gun. Oh, they are using the raw meat. I must get to him. Oh, God, help me.
The ants must be near here, Harvey. These savages must have been stalking us for hours. They've got us where they want us now.
I'll stop them somehow. I've got to stop them.
They must be almost here. Listen, Harvey. I'm done for.
Jackson, old boy,
there's
don't give up.
One way you can help me now. Listen carefully.
Yes?
We've been through a lot together, haven't we?
Yes, but...
We'd kill for one another, wouldn't we?
You bet we would.
Then, Harvey, fall back as if you're through. When the ant army appears on the edge of the clearing, these savages will be concentrating on me. You can jerk loose and shoot. Man, shoot quick and straight.
You mean?
I mean I'm asking you to release me from a horrible death.
My God, Jackson, you're asking me to murder my best friend.
They're coming, Harvey. Promise me.
I can't, man, I can't.
Oh, be merciful. You'd do that for a dog in their path. You'd... look, Harvey, the edge of the clearing, the cannibal ants. For God's sake, pal, for all that you love, shoot!
Ants! Millions of them! Filling the clearing, covering the meat. They'll swarm over Jackson. Let me go, you devils! Let me go! Take that! And that! I'll drive you in with the ants! Bullets or ants, which do you like best, eh? Run! That's right! Run, you devils! Run! Jackson! Oh, I've done it, old friend. I've killed you and I didn't mean to. But it was a good shot, wasn't it? That black devil was right in line with you. I meant the bullet for him. But you're free now. Free as you asked to be.
Great Scott, Clark. I wonder that you retained your sanity after such a horrible experience. How did you escape the savages?
Yes, how did you escape
from poor death?
The shock of knowing that I had killed Jackson drove me completely mad. And I fainted after glimpsing my friend, covered with a living shroud of animal ants.
Take it easy, old man.
When I recovered my sanity, I learned that a passing trader and his men had rescued me. They had heard the tom-toms and had started for them, thinking it a native celebration. My shots brought them on the run, and they took me to the coast. Later, they returned to that clearing with government soldiers, hoping to find the savages in the vicinity. But they had no luck. I don't think they ever will. Meanwhile, Jackson's death haunts me day and night.
Mr. Clark, you should have nothing on your conscience. You killed your friend by accident, but in so doing, you obeyed a wilderness law. You rescued him.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Well, if that is your verdict, gentlemen, then you've given me new life. Something greater than I must have directed the shot that killed Jackson. In reality, I rescued him.
Yes, that's right. Yes, we've done the same.
Absolutely. I've never sailed the Amazon. I've never reached Brazil. But the Don and the Magdalena, they can go there when they will. Oh, yes, weekly from Southampton, great steamers, white and gold, gold rolling down to Rio, roll down to Rio, and I'd like to roll to Rio someday before I'm old to roll.
And so the mysterious stranger has unburdened his heart to his kind and found solace. For these men have seen the worst and come out the best. Don't forget that you're always a welcome guest to hear of their strange adventures in strange lands.
Just turn around real slow and don't get any stupid ideas, okay? Like you said, you ain't going to give me no argument. No argument at all.
Now, look here, kid. Mister, there ain't no need. I told you, there's the cash register. Help yourself.
Five bills? Five crummy bills?
Mister, I don't want no trouble. You can have whatever's here. Just take it and go, okay?
Theater 5 presents Mr. James Earl Jones in Incident on U.S. 1.
Diner, fella. You sure you don't want to go on into town? Be there another 10 minutes.
This is okay.
Suit yourself. There won't be much traffic night like this. You might be stuck here for a while. A
friend of mine works here. I'm okay.
Oh, you know Joe?
Yeah.
Makes the lousiest cup of Java on the strip. Tell him for me.
Smoky, all covered with dust. If the devil don't get you, then good luck.
Hey!
Donald, I'll be right with you.
Yeah?
Oh,
what'll it be, kid?
Cigarettes. You got any cigarettes?
The machine right behind you.
I mean, I need some change.
Out of one. There you go. You, gonna be wanting anything else? I'm closing up.
Yeah. Cup of coffee.
How you take it?
Heavy on the milk.
Yeah, the first guy that's been in all night. I guess any guy that come out in a night like this would have to have a good reason, huh?
I ran out of smokes. That good enough? If it ain't, I got a better one. Like running out of loot? Now just turn around real slow and don't get any stupid ideas, okay?
Ah, look, kid.
The name is Mister.
Now, look, I don't own this joint. And personally, I don't care if you steal the floorboards. I get paid one way or the other. So stash the hardware, okay? I ain't going to give you no argument.
Oh, I know that. Now, just take off your tie and put your hands behind your back. I'm going to lay this gun down long enough to tie your hands. But don't get any ideas about trying to grab it. That's right. Just toss the tie on the counter. Now take off your belt so I can tie those big feet of yours. Then I'm going to stuff a few napkins in that big mouth and tie up the whole package nice and pretty with a handkerchief. Like you said, you ain't going to give me no argument. No argument at all.
Now look here, kid. Mister, there ain't no need. I told you, there's the cash register. Help yourself.
Five bills? Five crummy bills?
It's been a slow night.
Don't put me on, man. Where's the safe?
In the kitchen. But it's empty.
Sure it is.
Now, look, I'm telling you the truth. It's Saturday. The boss never leaves the take here over the weekend. You know, you ain't the first guy ever come in here with a gun.
Come on. The belt.
Now, look, you want the combination? Okay. Five to the right, left to five, right to five. Go see for yourself.
I got plenty of time. Let's have the wallet.
It's in my back pocket.
Just hold that hallelujah position. Well, I see what we have here. Nothing there. Well, let's see what we have in this little old secret compartment. $10. Oh, man, you're loaded.
Now, look, mister, I don't want no trouble. You can have whatever's here. Just take it and go, okay?
In the minute I'm out of here, you're on the phone describing me to the highway patrol. How are you going to describe me, Pops? Tall, thin, black? I'd be up to my armpits in fuzz before I got to the next intersection.
All right, so pull out the wires. There's no skin off my nose.
Sure, pull out the wires, Pop, and remember, I'm right behind you and I'm getting nervous every minute. Now, just give the wires a good hard pull. Oh, you do good work. Now, back to the counter. We'll get you all nice and bound and gagged.
You don't have to do that.
If I don't, what are you going to do while I'm out in the kitchen? What was it now? Five to the right, left back to five, and right to five again?
Okay, have it your way. Only point that gun away, huh? You're shaking like a guy in a cold turkey ward.
I'm cold, Pops. I'm so cold I feel like I'm never going to get warm again. That's why I'm shaking, Pops. I'm just cold.
And, why don't you have your coffee while it's nice and hot, huh?
Oh, you care, don't you? Okay, get the coffee. And then we go back in the kitchen and you can open the safe.
All right, here you go. Nice and hot.
Oh! Right hand!
Okay, now I'll call the shots. Stay away from that counter. Put your hands over your head.
But, oh, my hand.
You'll live.
Okay, okay. So you're king of the hill. What you gonna do?
Shoot you, maybe.
Yeah, and what would that get you?
Satisfaction,
make
maybe.
Make you happy, huh?
Yeah, sure.
Look, Pops.
The name's Mister, kid.
Look, Mister, let me go, huh?
What for? To try your luck further down the highway?
I know you won't believe me, but I've never done nothing like this before, ever.
Oh, I believe.
Look, I just had to have some money.
Join the club. You think you're the only guy ever needed money?
Oh, gee.
Evening,
officer.
Man, what a night.
Yeah, sure is.
Let me have a coffee in Danish and some change for this. Got to make a call.
Yeah, the phone's out. It's been out all night. The storm.
Well, I'll give it a try. The rain's let up a little.
I just tried just before you came in. It's dead.
Well, I'll call from town.
Here's your coffee. Well, what kind of Danish?
Wife always worries when it's like this. I don't care. Prune. You got a paper?
There's usually three or four papers around. There's nobody been in. All right, fella. Hold it there. I was just going to feed the mutt.
Oh.
you want anything else? Just holler.
Okay.
All right, old fella. It's coming.
Hey, kid.
Yeah?
Is that today's paper in your pocket?
Oh, yeah. Today's.
Mind if I have a look? I just want to see how the Dodge is made out.
You can keep it. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You didn't spill it. You live around here?
Yeah, in town.
Uh-huh. Whereabouts in town?
We just moved here.
How'd you get out here? I didn't see any wheels out front.
I hitched.
What, to come out to a diner in the middle of nowhere? You got something against people? Let's see your ID.
Hey, kid, you haven't got anything better to do. How about wiping up that mess on the counter, huh?
Oh, sure.
Kids, if I didn't tell him to wipe it up, he'd wait till it evaporated.
Why didn't you say you worked here?
You didn't ask me.
That's right, I didn't. Hey, where's Joe, by the way?
Wife's sick. He's taking the night off.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Tell Joe I'm sorry.
Who shall I say told me?
Tell him Al, the cop.
Yeah, I'll do that. More coffee?
No, I got to call in. I'll see you.
I don't figure you, Pops. I come in here and pull a heist. You get a chance to turn me in, and instead you cover for me. I don't dig.
Maybe I got my reasons.
So are we square or what?
Maybe I want the pleasure of taking care of you myself.
Look, here's the money. Let's just forget it, okay? Okay, Pops?
The name's still Mister. Now you come on over here and sit down. That's right. Now take off your belt. And remember, my hand's never going to be out of reach of that gun.
Look, mister, you're going to let me go. You had your chance to turn me in and you didn't. So what's with the gun and the belt bit?
You're scared, ain't you?
No, I ain't scared.
You were scared when you walked in here, you were scared when you pulled the gun on me, and you're scared now.
Okay, so I'm scared.
I want you to be good and scared. So maybe you'll think a couple of times before you do it again.
I said, have it your way.
I figure on having it my way as long as I got a gun and you ain't.
Oh, man, what have I gotten myself into? What are you, some kind of creep?
Your hand hurt?
You care whether my hand hurts?
I asked you a question.
No, I scald it with coffee every day for kicks, like I'm a masochist.
Oh, yeah. Here, put some butter on it. And hand over your belt.
Hey, what are you going to do? Just do it, okay?
Put the butter on your burn first.
Oh, man, I sure pick 'em.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, well, save the tears.
Don't give me none of your lip.
All right. I'm sorry. I believe you care.
All right. Now put your hands behind your back. How old are you, kid?
21. 21 pushing 50.
Yeah, I figured you for about that age. I got a kid myself.
You got a kid? That's the best news I've heard in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, just about your age.
Everybody's got a kid my age. I run into guys my age all over. Come on, what do you want to tie me up for?
Now, you listen to me. I'm going to ask you some questions. And whether you walk out of here depends on your answers. You get me?
I got your message a while back.
This your first heist?
No. A Mad Dog Earl.
I asked you a question.
Well, there's got to be a first time for everything, right?
Wrong. Dead wrong. Anyhow, not for this. Now, look, I didn't figure you for a regular heist, and I can tell from looking at you, you ain't no hype.
No, like I'm an oil burner, man. Thanks a lot. Look, I'm no chippy, mister.
I figured that wasn't the reason you needed the dough that bad.
My old lady needed an operation. I had to raise bail for my father. I wanted to put myself through school. What do you want from me?
You're not so tough. You know, a lot of times a guy in trouble does things he wouldn't do otherwise. Okay, but this ain't the answer.
What difference does it make why I needed the dough? I had to have it.
I bet you ain't even handled a gun before.
I've been around.
Oh, sure. Then how come I'm holding your own gun on you now?
If I tell you I got a big deal waiting for me and I had to get the bus fare or I'd blow it, would you believe that?
What kind of a deal?
I know a guy who'll give me a chance to drive in the drag races on the coast.
Oh, you're a race driver?
I don't know, but I got a chance to find out. But I got a show there before Thursday, or I'll never know.
How much do you need?
Bus fare is $20.
Well, you got 15.
What do you mean I got 15? I got the change for the buck I bought smokes with.
$5 from the till and the 10 you got out of my wallet.
Hey, are you putting me on?
Why would I do that?
Wait a minute. Just let me get something straight. I come in here to rob you. You get the drop on me. You get a chance to turn me over to the boy in blue and you don't. And then you tell me to keep the dough. What's the catch, mister?
You pull a stunt like you tried tonight. Maybe you get away with it. Maybe you don't. If you're lucky, you don't. You get caught. You get caught good the first time and you pay up then and there. Or you start running. You can't ever stop. You run 1,000 miles and you think you're safe. Then you turn a corner or you open a door or you just look up sometime, and there it is. You might just as well hadn't run at all. You pay up in the end anyway. Only by then you owe so much you never get out from under. You spend the rest of your life paying off.
Well, look, I wasn't thinking on making a career out of it.
I know a lot of guys who were going to do it only once, just the one time, just to get them out of a jam. And it was easy. And the next time they got in a jam, and believe me, there always is a next time, they said to themselves, okay, just one more time, just one more time. Now, you don't believe me. Ask some of them. Any visitor's day.
Well, you're right out of an old TV movie.
Yeah, sure, crime pays, but it ain't worth the price.
You sure you ain't really Santa Claus?
Is that mutt again? He wants to go out. All right, fella, I'm coming. Wait a minute, I'll just undo your belt. And yeah. All right, old fella. All right, I'm coming. All right, old boy. There you are. Now just stay off the highway. What? You still here?
You really mean it? I mean, Pops, you something else.
I don't get you.
I could have cut out of here just now while you were in the kitchen.
Why didn't you?
Go figure it.
I got a couple of things to say to you, and then you can go. I want you to keep one thing in mind, boy. Nothing stays bad forever. And if you look around long enough and hard enough, you'll find somebody to help you over the hump.
Mister, you haven't lived where I live. I mean in my skin, mister. There's nobody looking to help a guy my color over the hump. Man, they're lining up to push me off the mountain.
Suppose you'd gotten away with it tonight and I had to report it. You know the description I'd have to give the cops? You spelled it out yourself. And you know what you'll be to people who read about it? Not just some kid who pulled a heist, but some kind of monster.
You better go to join the march, man.
Every time somebody like you gets into trouble like this, it puts your people right back to the starting line. And don't make out that you don't care, because you care, boy. Because you've got a lifetime to live in that skin of yours, and your kids will all have their lives to live in theirs.
Yeah, you're telling me that unless you happen to be white, stay out of trouble. Nobody else gets into trouble. Oh, no.
I'm not saying that's the way it ought to be, but I'm saying that's the way it is right now. And the way it's going to keep on being unless kids like you change it.
I'm just one guy, mister. Just one tall, thin, black boy.
And you got to make that guy the best guy you know how. And other guys got to make themselves the best they know how. And other guys, and other guys. And you got to start 500 years ago to make up for lost time.
Can I go now, please?
Sure. Go. Kid, I'm sorry I had to be a little rough on you, but I wanted to make sure you'd remember.
Here's your wallet.
All right, I'll take the wallet, but you keep the dough, like I said.
You sure are something else.
I'm not giving you the money. I'm just lending it to you until you get yourself back on the road.
My first pay, 15 goes right in an envelope. Hey, where do I send it?
Here. Joe's Diner. Put down Fred.
Fred.
Now get out of here. The rain's let up. You shouldn't have any trouble getting a hitch to the next town.
Yeah. Well, cool it, okay? And let's keep in touch. I mean, I'd like to write to you, okay? Maybe you'll write to me?
Yeah, sure, kid. Sure. Don't hold your breath, punk. Shut up, Joe, or I'll have to keep you quiet with this knife. Maybe I should anyway, just for kicks. Teach you not to try to get that cop in here after I told you to lay quiet. But you've been nice and quiet and cooperative, giving me the combination and all. Like you said, it's no skin off your nose, so I'll just forget it. If you just lay there nice and quiet. Let's see, five to the right, back to five, and right to five. Now let's see what we have here. Oh, not bad. Not bad at all. Nearly $400. That's a lot of hamburgers, huh, Joe? By the way, in case you got any ideas about trying to get loose and calling the cops, I think I ought to tell you the phone's out of order. So you just plan on relaxing until somebody finds you tomorrow morning. Well, that's real considerate of you. I was going to ask to borrow your car anyway. Just to town, you understand. I'll leave it in front of the police station where they won't have any trouble finding it for you. Oh, yeah. You'll be getting 15 of this back. I lent it to a young kid with a real honest face. On top of old Smokey, all covered with rust. If the good...
Hey, anybody here? Pops, kid, I lost my ticket book. I figured it must have fell out when I... Oh, here it is. Hey, what's wrong in here?
Theater 5 has presented Incident on U.S. 1, written by Hal Hackady, directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, James Earl Jones, James McCallion, and Robert Dryden. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Thank you. executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby. Thank you.